vastness of interstellar space.
Contemplate the vast.
The brain has evolved from the inside out. Its structure reflects all the stages through which it has passed.
Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems. In the form of energy,
all of our sensory systems,
and then it explodes into this enormous collage. Of what this present moment looks like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like.
Rather gruesome, rather wrinkles like a walnut, and with the consistency of mushroom. Mushrooms, like a walnut.
What we know is included in cells called neurons,
and there are something like 100 trillion neural connections.
This intricate and marvelous network of neurons has been called an enchanted loom. An enchanted loom.
The neurons store sounds to and snatches of music. Whole orchestras play inside our heads.
20 million volumes worth of information is inside the heads of every one of us.
The brain
is a very big place.
It's
a very small space.
Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems.
In the form of energy.
And then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like.
No longer at the mercy of the reptile brain, we can change ourselves. Think of the possibilities.
Think of your brain as a newspaper. Think of all the information it can store. But it doesn't take up too much room, because it's full.
Think of all the information it can store.
We see with the eyes, but we see with the brain as well. And seeing with the brain is often called imagination.
The brain
can contemplate the vast
range. The brain
has evolved in successive stages.
It is the most mysterious part of the human body, and yet it dominates the way we live our adult lives. It is the brain.
All right, welcome back. Once again, you are listening to Splice on radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Tortula, and tonight we will be covering neuroplasticity, which is the ability of the brain to reorganize neural pathways in response to environmental stimuli or energy, aka your ability to learn, form memories, and all that good stuff in a cool and effective and fluid way throughout your life. So, first, we're going to look at a brief history of how we've understood the brain, however, to understand why this concept of neuroplasticity is so unique and revolutionary within our time. Traditionally, it's been held that neurons were genetically hardwired based off their environment. So as you developed, you had your eye neurons develop and your ear neurons develop and your nose neurons develop and your sense of touch neurons develop and then your right-handed and your left-handed and your math and your science neurons develop. And you have all the structure in place and then all your knowledge, rather, instead of actually altering the structure of the brain, stems to just add and create inputs into this machinery already present. However, we have recently discovered that it's not so true. If you want some more information on how we used to view the brain, you can check out some of the older textbook images of the brain where you'll see color-coded mapping offs of each section with little details and asterisks about what each part does. Also, you can check out phrenology, which is the study of the shape of the skull showing characteristics of a person, which is supposed to match which parts of your brain are developed and somehow which parts pushed out your skull during development. It's not quite clear, but this practice was used often in psychology as well as medicine throughout the 19th century, especially in Europe. So if you ever read any of the old Jane Austen novels, which I know I love to do, they often describe characters' heads in vast detail because they check them out to see what kind of person they are. So if you look at the literature, you can actually tell what kind of person Mr. Darcy is compared to the other characters by how they describe his head, which is maybe why they keep calling him handsome, so you know he's not some evil degenerate. And apparently people who have misshapen and malformed heads are just inherently evil. Anyways, check it out, and I'd like to thank Dr. Beaumont for pointing that phrenology plays a heavy role in Jane Austen and the Bronte novels. Now, to get to neuroplasticity, and when neuroplasticity as an idea started to come into light. Well, it actually was in the 19th century, the same time phrenology was present. It was first suggested that rearrangement of the brain was possible in Principles of Psychology by William James in 1890. However, this theory was actually largely poo-pooed upon by the establishment and was largely ignored for at least 50 years. Carl Lashley conducted experiments later in the 1920s that looked at neural pathways in rhesus monkeys. These were the first experiments that looked at actual developing pathways across time, rather than the idea that the pathways were already developed during your childhood or during the development in the embryo. Later in 1949, Donald Hebb proposed the aptly named Hebbian theory that goes, if we assume that persistent or repetition of an activity tends to introduce lasting cellular changes that adds to the stability of a neural connection, then that axon, when excited by cell A or cell B, repeatedly persists in firing and the growth of the process or metabolic changes takes place as both cells become more efficient, and so the signaling is increased. All that gobbledygook means that when cell A and cell B talk to each other a lot, that pathway gets stronger. So it's easier and more efficient for them to talk if they do it repeatedly. This is the idea that's ingrained that if you don't use it, you lose it because it'll weaken, and further, doing these repetitive actions and these trainings will incorporate it into your mind longer. And this is a widely held belief that in neuroscience still, that our neural pathways and our abilities are all based off this concept that we make neural connections through our actions, through our learning, and then these neural connections are either strengthened or waste away. So we make a huge number of neural connections that we never use again. For example, like a neural connection for buying a lottery ticket if you don't live in a state with the lottery, or if you just aren't in the mood to gamble ever, which would be a wise and logical choice. But that neural pathway of how to buy a lottery ticket or the experience of buying a lottery ticket would slowly waste away and eventually go on to be used elsewhere. In the 1980s and 1990s, there were the famous Silver Spring monkey experiments, which were conducted by Edward Taub. He is famous for the protests and ethical violations brought about by PETA and Congress for these experiments. But let's go over what he did before we judge him too harshly yet. He surgically prevented the feeling from the limbs in the monkeys from reaching their brain. So he cut the nerves that went from their limbs to their brains so they could not feel them, but the limbs were actually still active. He then prevented one arm from moving and to see if the monkey would be able to use the other arm that had no feeling, but so was still physically fully functional. And he found that indeed, yes, the monkeys could use the arms even after they have lost feeling in the arms. This was considered the first sign of true evidence of neuroplasticity and began the process of introducing neuroplasticity as a serious field of study in neuroscience. However, Edward Taub was later charged with criminal ethic violations as a scientist and is not doing so well currently. And the Silver Spring monkey experiments live on in infamy and are not really held up for their amazing contribution to promoting the theory of neuroplasticity. Recently, neuroplasticity, as I said, is being accepted, and new approaches are being developed using this theory of the brain to work on stroke recovery, learning, and behavioral disorders, as well as being incorporated into physical therapy, as we'll talk about a little bit later when we cover how neuroplasticity interacts with injury. So here are a couple mechanisms of neuroplasticity in case you're wondering what all this means underneath and where it all comes from. Neuroplasticity is believed to originate from the gray matter, which is the major component of the central nervous system in your brain. The gray matter is composed of closely packed neural cell bodies compared to white matter, which is generally considered to be a lot of connective tissues and supporting cells. The name gray matter, if you're curious, comes from MRI scans. So if you look at an MRI scan, this dense cell will look gray, while as the connective tissue will look light, and anything that's not actually a cell of tissue will look black. And the name has seemed to stuck throughout texts. Also, a major concept in the understanding of neuroplasticity is the idea of a cognitive reserve. This cognitive reserve is the ability to restructure methods of thinking in a way to work around injuries or shortcomings. However, the point of cognitive reserve is that you can do it subconsciously. So we might all have a variable cognitive reserve when we are born, and we might actually be using it without even knowing. For example, if, let's say, out of nowhere, someone has limited depth perception because one of their eyes is significantly weaker, they have a cognitive reserve in their brain that is constantly working to rearrange from its normal structure of having two inputs to refocus that on interpreting the world based off of one eye. And some of this can be harmful. For example, if you can correct that one eye, it still means that the brain is now structurally developed to habitually change all the world to that one eye. So correcting that one eye no longer matters. However, with the idea of neuroplasticity is eventually, if the eye is corrected long enough, that the brain will once again go back to using two eyes. There are some things against this. For example, there's a famous kitten experiment where newborn kittens had one of their eyes sewn shut during their developmental phase. And weeks later, when they unstitched the closed eye, the kittens could not use the eye because they did not have those neural pathways developed, and the kittens were one-eyed for the rest of their lives. However, once again, this could be performed subconsciously. Another example is including the eye, since that's usually an easy one to see, is if you wear a pair of glasses that flips your world upside down, your brain will eventually, subconsciously, without you ever having to say, or even having the ability to say, flip the world back, will change the world back to the right side direction after a couple of days. However, because your brain can do this subconsciously without your mental cognitive direction, and because it often will not reverse even with your cognitive direction, it makes it difficult to assess the level of reserve and also to work with this level of reserve in physical therapy. Other factors that influence neuroplasticity, apart from the cognitive reserve of each individual and how much it has been used or saved, also is genetics. Many Non-mammals have the ability to regrow neurons, while mammals have a limited ability to do this. This also varies greatly from species to species. So you might see a lobster who lives forever be able to regrow his neurons, but a human child who's 3 still have a lesser ability to do so. Further, there seems to be some sort of epigenetic trait that we are not privy to as of yet that influences the ability of neurons to regrow. So, for example, if you move neurons from the central nervous system to the periphery nervous system, there is regrowth. So those central nerves can actually become periphery nerves. However, if you move the periphery nerves to the central nervous system, they will not grow. So if you move nerves from your brain to your fingertips can feel. But if you move your fingertips to your brain, it does not mean your brain can think, unfortunately, because I feel like there's some nerves I could spare to give a little boost to my brain. There are also factors that come with age. Age is already known to decrease gray matter, and this also has been shown to decrease cognitive adaptability of people within their old age. There are also a lot of studies focusing on the role of enriching environments and developing and maintaining plasticity through use of creativity and in enriched new circumstances. For example, mice in enriched environments, even in old age, live longer and show less cognitive decline. So if a mouse is, let's say, in middle age, which is about 10 years for a mouse, and goes from a non-enriched to an enriched environment, they will live longer than a mouse that remains in the unenriched environment. And further, these mice seem to be more adaptive and happier through swim tests. There's also debate about the role of happiness and stress in neuroplasticity and whether stress reduces neuroplasticity. An example of this is that people or animals under pressure during a set of tests, for example, when there's a motivation such as keeping your job or getting a bonus, will perform worse and actually have cognitive deficiency in learning that new skill compared to people who are not under stress. Stem cells have been proposed as a means to replace this lost plasticity with old age, as they have been proposed to replace everything, but no studies are currently underway and no plans seem to have clearly established if stem cells would be able to replace plasticity or even what the origin of plasticity is, because if it's neurodevelopment, it is not a matter of more cells, but rather more connections that is necessary. Along with age and genetics, there's also the nature factor, which in this case is training. So the activities you do with your body can influence how much neuroplasticity you have. So for example, musicians will show a large shift in gray matter over time as they practice compared to those who do not play music. So the actual physical forms in their brain that highlight when they play music grow and expand and shift into other regions that were considered to be used for other purposes before. Gray matter also shifts depending on physical activity and can move in the brain when you do aerobic exercise or skilled activities like archery or shooting a gun. The central nervous system is also controlled by these actions and also desires. So the idea is that if you can train through physical actions such as playing board games or running or skilled activities, your central nervous system can actually control your subconscious and in that way remove some of the negative desires. So for example, the idea is that if you train yourself to concentrate, you will be less distracted by a noise outside or by the fact that you have chocolate cake downstairs. In fact, your brain might get so good that you don't even want the chocolate cake just habitually, because it is able to concentrate, focus, and think out longer without you having to consciously reason through it, which can help you live a happier, healthier life if you complete this training and this training works as hypothesized. This idea of sustained concentration has also fed into many psychological disorders. For example, ADD, ADHD, and OCD are all conditions which are being explored for treatments using neuroplasticity idea, in that behavior modification can actually decrease, or in the case of OCD, or increase in the case of ADD and ADHD, the regions of the brain used for concentrating and for taking in surroundings. So for the OCD person, if they go through proper training and their brain changes, their brain should no longer consciously fixate on it, and the actual neural connections will change within their brain through these behavior modifications. And with ADD and ADHD, the idea is that the neural networks allowing for concentration grow stronger, and these individuals can then concentrate through practice, much more so having a effect on their brain without using drugs. I'm going to take a quick musical break. When we come back, I will cover world news, US news, and science news, as well as go into how drugs and the immune system, as well as the potential of new direct-to-brain, brain-to-machine computer interfaces, will work with the cognitive neuroplasticity and consciousness and all that good stuff. So I hope you stay tuned. I will be back shortly, and while you wait, here's If I Only Had a Brain.
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching, if I only had a brain. Well, I'd unravel any riddle, for any individual, in trouble or in pain. With the thoughts I'd be thinking, I could be another Lincoln if I only had a brain. Well, I could tell you why the ocean is near the shore, and I could think of things I'd never thunk before, and then I'd sit and think some more. Well, I would not be just a nothing, my head all full of stuffing, and my heart all filled with pain. I could dance and be merry, life would be a ding-a-dairy if I only had a brain.
Welcome back. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. This is Splice. I'm your host, DJ Tortula, and we are covering neuroplasticity today on Splice. But first, at the bottom of the hour, we have the news and world news today. Tensions between the United States and Egypt have risen as the Egyptian government seeks to prosecute 43 people, including 19 Americans, for their role in promoting democratic ideals in Egypt. Also, unrest in Syria after diplomatic talks break down. In other news, three Tibetan herders have set themselves on fire in protest of Chinese actions, bringing the year-to-date total of self-immolation to 19. And Queen Elizabeth has been on the throne today for 60 years. Congratulations, and I think the appropriate thing to say at this time is long live the Queen. And indeed, she has. Congratulations, Queen Elizabeth. In U.S. news, it's the day after the Super Bowl. I can say, is the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Go Giants. Mitt Romney took the Nevada caucuses, and in my classic hometown fashion, Ron Paul also made a very strong showing. There has been an announcement that the U.S. Air Force and other armed forces are beginning to cut large numbers of troops. Obama proposes to also transition veterans to government work as cops, park rangers, and firefighters after they return from the war. I hope he gets that through Congress. I wish him the best. In science news, there has been a study released that primates can recognize human intentions and can respond to desires. The purpose of this study supposedly was to show that these animals can serve as service animals, but I rather interpret this as we are not as special as we think. Also, there's a study saying that addicts may be born with weaker self-control than those considered with normal brains or those who have not developed addictive behaviors. Concerns have been raised about the sampling group, however, in this study. Also in the news, science has finally finished its final shuttle run, and it is considered by NPR and NASA in their press release the end of the shuttle age, and space exploration is beginning to turn towards commercial shuttles and for higher space exploration. A continuing news story is the H5N1 flu has been developed to have a mammalian-to-mammalian control pathogen variation. So there's been a lot of suggestion that this study should remain out of the journals because this technology could eventually result in falling into the wrong hands and being used for biological warfare. It's currently a huge ethical debate about whether or not this sort of science should be conducted, and if so, where, when, and how to publish it. In further news, there have been chimera monkeys. Three chimera monkeys, Rico, Hex, and Chimero, were born, all males, all containing six different complete genomes in their embryos. This means that these monkeys are made of six different individuals. The lab reports that these monkeys are doing very well. So congratulations on the new arrivals to the Oregon National Primate Research Center. There's also been a study reporting that Alzheimer's spreads through the brain like a virus. Now, not to say that this is a virus and there's been no evidence that there was a virus, but it has been shown that Alzheimer's starts from a single location and then branches out to neighboring cells and spreads that way through the brain. This goes against some of the previous models which have suggested that Alzheimer's is an overall degenerative disease, and this was shown in most models, not humans. And finally, my favorite story in the science news cycle of the week is that massages actually change gene expression. That's right, massages to your muscles actually change the actual proteins at the mRNA level that are being made in your cells because they feel so awesome. They actually help your cells better process energy in the mitochondria. So if you think that getting a massage is extravagant, just remember, your massage is worth as much as all the current genetic and enzyme replacement therapies right now on the market. So go ahead, get your massage. It's a medical treatment. All right, thanks. That's the news at the bottom of the hour. To go back to our topic of neuroplasticity, we're going to touch upon two areas before moving on to neuroplasticity and brain injury. First, the user interfaces and neuroplasticity. There's been belief that user interfaces between computers directly from the brain were, first of all, considered impossible, and second of all, considered to have created some sort of evil loop where you don't actually think any thoughts separate from actions you take in the computer. So rather than controlling the computer actually trains your brain to act in a certain way, thereby controlling you. This is the idea that our brains are so incredibly powerful that their plasticity has the ability to take over at any point and will completely move around the machine. To this, I have only to respond that I think it has already happened. So, bioethicists, calm down. We are already the Facebook generation with the short time spans and the incredible inability to hold a thought, which kind of explains some of the things I have said on this show. There's also this idea that because our brains are flexible, that things like drug treatments don't only create addiction in some sort of chemical manner, but actually also create addiction in that the neural pathways in the brain will degrade and be used elsewhere, so that your brain is no longer capable of doing that task. So when you take a drug for a long time, those neuron connections actually atrophy over time, and your brain can't do that anymore unless it relearns, making the recovery and addiction removal process even harder. All right, on to brain injuries and neuroplasticity. So how your brain recovers from these diseases. But first, let's take a break for Science and Societies, or I like to call it Thought to Think. First thought to think of the day. Having a fixed and universal brain arrangement may imply there is one true happiness, one true moral, and one true thought process for all individuals. So, if your brains are all built the same way, the same life will make you happy. However, if there's neuroplasticity and your brain changes over time depending on your individual experiences, this could mean there are many definitions of happy, and you can even train yourself to think you are happy in situations which might normally not be considered inducive to happiness. So that's a thought to think. Think about whether your brain is fixed, like the Victorians thought, or it is plastic and flexible, like we currently theorize, and whether or not that will have an impact on the goals you set in life. Second thought to think of Science and Society, the show. If neuroplasticity is true, individuals are responsible for the constant maintenance of good habits and interesting thinking. So if your brain does have this incredible neuroplasticity, that means you can actually atrophy your imagination by watching way too many seasons of Lost, passively drooling at the side of your mouth, as I may have done a while ago. So take that into account and think about if you are responsible for the health of your brain as well as if you are responsible for the health of your body, and whether that TV show, that video game, that chocolate bar, or even that boring conversation with that person you don't really like is worth it. Those are my thoughts to think. Traumatic brain injury and neuroplasticity. Brain injury can destroy parts of the brain physically. The brain in those sections is dead or gone. A good example of this, one of the original examples, is Phineas Gage, who was a man who had a railroad spike through his skull. And though he survived and lived a full life, his personality was changed dramatically by this event. So question is whether, even with our neuroplasticity, first, if our neuroplasticity can change our personalities, and second, if this neuroplasticity, like in the case of Phineas Gage, can change us in ways we don't want to be changed. Is there a conscious way to tell your brain, no, I would rather lose my sense of smell than lose my sense of empathy or the love I have for this person? The answer is not yet, but things like this show you that your brain is set on survival more than your consciousness might be. Also, there has been signs that when injury destroys parts of the brain, such as in stroke or in traumatic injury, the brain is capable of switching to different tasks. So for example, if you have a stroke that affects your optic nerve and those neural connections that support it, later you can actually try to see, and eventually your brain might actually adapt to restore part of your eyesight, if not all of it. This is why it's so important right now in current medical practice, based off these studies, to try to switch stroke patients onto not only physical therapy, but also behavior therapy, where they see where they attempt actions that seem impossible because of their brain injury. So, for example, you might ask someone with vision impairment to keep trying to see, or someone with a speech deficit to keep trying to speak, because you are actually trying to exercise or move that function in the brain. This is a huge departure from the idea that once the brain is dead, that area is gone and those tasks will never be recovered, and the only option is to cope with the fact that those sections are gone. So, huge change in practice of medicine based off of neuroplasticity if this theory does prove to be true. As I said before, a lot of this neuroplasticity is being implemented in the treatment of stroke patients. Stroke patients are especially encouraged to be in a particularly stimulating environment after their stroke in hopes of recovering as much of the brain function as possible. This goes against the traditional idea of rest and rehabilitation for stroke to try to make sure no further damage is done. Now, a cool aspect of a lot of this science is the phantom limb. Phantom limb is defined as the perception of sensations, usually including pain, in a limb that has been amputated. So your limb is gone, but your brain still thinks it's there and still acts like it's there. The brain can still get messages from the nerves that originally carried impulses down to the missing limbs, or in some cases, the actual phantom limb moves to different nerves in your brain. So, for example, if you lose your hand, there was a famous cotton swab experiment where the hand was missing and then a researcher would brush a cotton swab against the side of a participant's cheek, and the participant would feel that cotton on his hand rather than his cheek. And other studies have shown that nerves can also relearn to move prosthetics, and this can allow them to feel as though they actually still have a hand to move when it's long since been gone, and this creates a better ease to use their prosthetic arm. It has also been shown in the same way that a monkey can learn to use a prosthetic arm when the arm is not even attached. So by doing repeated training and coordinating the prosthetic arm with the monkey's brainwaves, the monkey can move a robotic arm in the room without actually being attached to it, and the monkey would use the same brain signals that he would have used to move a normal arm. I'm going to take a quick music break, and then we will return to talk about neuroplasticity in literature. Please stay tuned. You're listening to radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Tula. We're discussing neuroplasticity today on Splice. And as soon as we get back, we will discuss neuroplasticity in literature and film.
Step right up on the reasonable guy. Don't be frightened by the look in my eye. I'm just your average evil meteor from out of the sky. Well, I'm just shy and scared in this place. I'm just a fish out of water from outer space. You can see that the trip has left me tired and drained. So why don't you be a pal and bring me some brains? On his face, you've been doing him a favor if you brought him to me. He ain't using his brain, he's just watching TV. Go down to Mr. McGee's. He hasn't had a thought since 43. His brain is the portrait of using it, why not give it to me? Brains, brains, I won't lie, I'll eat the brains till the zombie bite. Sure, they might think it's deranged, but they won't give it a thought after I've eaten their brains. Brains, brains, it's okay, it's not a matter if it isn't great. And if at first they think it's strange, they won't think twice if they don't have a brain. My fortune cookie says that I just can't stop. I suck the noodle right out of the heads, and half an hour later I'm hungry again. Creep into the donut stop, sneaking tiptoe past the cop. Pick me up a crawler and a cup of tea, and any other sweetbreads you happen to see. Brains, brains, I won't lie, I'll eat the brains to the zombie pie. Sure, they might think it's deranged, but they won't give it a thought after I've eaten their brains. Brains, brains, it's okay, it's not a matter if it isn't gray. And if at first they think it's strange, they won't think twice if they don't have a brain. When I need them, big ones, fat ones, short ones, tall ones, they're so delectable, especially the small ones. No time to cook them in a skillet, I barely crumble in, I gotta need to fill it. I don't fry them, the heat'll only shrink them. I just grab myself a straw and I drink them.
Welcome back. I'm DJ Tortula. You are listening to Splice on radio.dominican.edu. For the final part of this show, I'm going to touch upon some of the cool literature that actually kind of supports the idea of neurotoxicity through its characters. My first example will be Tarzan. Yes, Tarzan of the Apes, Wild Man of the Jungle, actually went through neurodevelopment when he went from the jungle to the civilized society, having to rescape his entire idea of language and body behavior. This would involve an incredible amount of neuroplasticity as he moved regions of his brain around to learn new skills such as dining etiquette, where the fork goes, and how to impress the ladies, specifically Jane. The second example of neurotoxicity in our popular culture is The Matrix. The Matrix, the classic movie. Well, now it's classic, made in the 90s. Not classic for a while, my childhood. Anyways, The Matrix, in which Neo has to rethink the entire universe, kind of in one sitting, one very dramatic sitting, where he learns that what he perceives is not real, and thus he uses his new brain to develop an interesting way to view and sense the world, but not actually believe his senses. This would be an incredible stretch of your brain activity as the consciousness tries to override the unconscious, and I'm sure that would take up a huge portion of your brain to move around and focus on this skill set. So that's all I have for you on neurotoxicity today on Splice on radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Trutula. Next week, in honors of Valentine's Day, we will be covering the science of love and romance and human mating. So be sure to tune in next Monday from 6 to 7 for another installment of Splice. Check on radio.dominican.edu for links to the website page and to the Facebook page, soon to be up for links to Splice, as well as links to all the other great shows on radio.dominican.edu. I don't know if I said that enough. And they should be updated next week. You can check the website for all my sources, as well as interesting videos about neuroplasticity and next week love. And also, up next is Nikki P and Motastic for the final season of What's the Tea with Nikki P. So please stay tuned for that. It'll be surely entertaining. And I got a nod. Everyone's in the studio is totally jazzed up to come on. So please keep listening. They'll put on a great show. And I hope to see you next week. Thank you.